My name is Victoria Matei.
My name is Olga Araceli.
And we are both undocumented women of color.
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Olga.
Olga who?
It's been a while.
I know, it's been a minute since we've had the opportunity to sit down and record, but I'm glad you're back. I missed you.
Thank you.
I miss you all the time, actually.
I know. I miss being around everybody, and you specifically, and being up here in Bellingham, especially with these nice days. I am just like reminiscing on all the beautiful sunsets I'm used to see, and now I don't, but it's fine.
It's fine. So what have you been up to? Tell me, what have you been... I know you've been working, taking care of your family.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a new boo thing.
Yes. I think we... I don't know. I don't think we've ever talked about that yet. So yeah, just been working, taking care of family, myself, and figuring out life as it's been...
thrown at you left and right.
Yeah, throwing punches at me. But today I'm fine.
You look happy to me.
Yeah, so today I'm fine. And hopefully it'll just get better as summer comes along, and I'm excited to make plans and, you know, go out and see everybody again, hopefully.
Come visit more often.
Yeah. Yeah, that too.
There'll be more things to do, just like in general. Mm-hmm. Like, everyone always goes to Seattle for the events over the weekend.
I know.
I'll just be going to those more.
Yeah, so excited for that.
The boat parties. Mm-hmm. Except I hate those.
And yet there you are.
I know. I hate being that person that likes to go to these things. Like, I just like to be present with mm-hmm. my friends there, but I fucking... hate it. Like,
yeah,
I was the first one off that boat party last year. I like jumped off before it even like,
wow.
Yeah, I was over it anyway.
That's fine. Aside from that, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. I feel like work's a lot. I learned so much in my job, like managing students and like working with, you know, people that are pretty close to my age but mm-hmm. not, but we can still like hang out and think. I don't know, it's just a really weird position to be in. So learning a lot about myself and other people
mm-hmm.
and learning about how I would do things differently too.
Mm.
So I'm in a weird, like, questioning everything about my life including questioning myself. But I really like working in higher education, and I'm considering doing it for more time, but who knows?
Okay.
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
But that kind of ties into our topic today, which is something that we talk about all the fucking time. Like, on every episode, we have talked about this, but we've never had an episode on it.
Fully dedicated to it.
And it's not just, like, one episode we're going to have, you know? Like, this is an episode that could literally be so many different parts because mm-hmm. it's so different depending on where you are in the country,
mm-hmm.
where you are in the world, or, you know, all of the above. So the topic for today is
education.
And before this, we were kind of talking about like what are different types of education and how they're all valid. And we, you know, we had a whole episode about how education is really elitist, but there's also, you know, different forms of it. And whether that's like you're teaching yourself how to do certain things, or you're teaching other people, or as a community, you're working towards learning something together, or cultivating something together. You know, there's so many different forms, and all of that is completely valid.
Mm-hmm.
And I think recognizing that before any conversation on education is important, because
mm-hmm.
something that Olga said one time that really resonated with me was like, we cannot be measuring knowledge in English. And I've been thinking so much more about that, and even thinking about that within myself and my own biases
mm-hmm.
and what we think is like smart or intelligent is usually based off, can we understand it or not? So I don't know. I've been reflecting a lot about that.
Yeah. It's a very complex whole thing, the system, the way it's viewed and everything. And I think that's why we wanted to start off with that and just like make sure everybody kind of was aware. You know, there's different types of education and it's all valid, and knowledge in itself is very different and looks very different for everybody,
and it's expressed in different ways. Mm-hmm.
So we just want to make that clear.
Mm-hmm. For sure. And I also want to point out that like there's different, there's a process within education itself, like a mm-hmm. process of understanding it in your perspective, understanding it on other people's perspectives, and understanding mm-hmm. it how that is relative to the world. Mm-hmm. And also just like something in myself that I do, like I'm definitely like a person that's very action oriented. Like if I write something down and I like put it out in steps, I can go out and do it instantly. Mm-hmm. But I also have to like I'm one of those people that needs consulting. Like I love consulting with people and like, how are we going to build this? How are we going to do this? Mm-hmm. And then make it happen. Mm-hmm. But like, you know, it takes a whole community to make something happen. It's not just like one person and one person's ideas or one person that's action oriented. You really do need so many minds and heads mm-hmm. a part of the conversation to make it grow and come alive.
Yeah. Because I think when you can't come up with something or you can't think of something because of another person's maybe experience or, you know, knowledge, they can come up with something else and add to the conversation, and working together just makes such a difference and make things like such like greater. Mm-hmm.
And I want to see, like, I picture myself being a consultant in the future, where I tell other people what to do. Yeah, I definitely see you do that. I know. I always tell people, I'm like, I'm really good at telling people what to do. Mm-hmm. But also, I'm very, like, mindful of consulting with people and being like, oh, like, bouncing off ideas mm-hmm. and this and that.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Anyway, alongside all of that unpacking that I've been having and reflections and things that Olga has said that just inspire me all the fucking time, we were talking about like K through 12 and how there, you know, at the time when we were in K through 12, we didn't mm-hmm. necessarily have these resources. And maybe if we did have some of them, there's also barriers within them. Mm-hmm. So some of those were including
like college access or programs, more so that led it like and taught us how to get into a higher education. Or what kind of like career path and stuff like that we wanted to take. I think as first gen students, that was also like a little bit difficult because, I mean, we had to go like learn all the like the language in terms of like what it meant going into higher education, and when like things such as scholarships and like funds and all of that was required, you know, in college applications and all that, like learning all of that. Especially if you didn't have, I know at my school we had like a career and something, a career and college advisor or something mm-hmm. like that. I don't know. She was always super excited about like getting everybody into some type of higher education. Mm-hmm. Like she was just such a peppy, like, oh, what are you gonna do? Or, you know, like these are due this week, or like, have you thought about this school? And yeah,
she was excited. A different experience. I went to this person who was a career whatever advisor. Yeah.
What are their titles?
And I was like, so I'm undocumented and I want to go to this school. Mm-hmm. And he was just pretty much like, I don't know how you're going to do it.
Wow.
And so he was like, I've only heard of this happening one other time. Mm-hmm. When I know that's not true, it's just like people weren't able to like, you know, say it and stuff. And at that time, I did not have DACA or anything. That, mm-hmm. Yeah. But he was just kind of like, yeah, I don't know how to help you, but we can try to figure something out. Mm-hmm. So I didn't really, I don't know.
I mean, like for me, I didn't tell the person that I was undocumented. But because at some point I was like, you know, like, I don't know if you're supposed to like tell them or how do you like figure this out? Or do I just have to like figure it out on my own? And I also wasn't sure if I wanted to go straight to like a university or do like, you know, community college. But she was always excited and willing to, like, help with whatever it was that, and you know, the student needed or wanted to move forward with. So
that's interesting. And now we're seeing that there's a lot more of that now that, you know, it's all over with DACA, without DACA, et cetera. A lot of people more like having more opportunities and access into higher ed because of the resources that are being developed. But now there's programs that will actually connect like students with different schools and give them campus tours and connect them with the right people and stuff. And again, that is amazing. And and that should be implemented everywhere. But that's also recognizing that we live in a pretty progressive state that, you know, that kind of ties in with that geographical privilege we talked about in that because we just happened to be here, we benefited from all of these things that, again, it wasn't easy or whatever, but like we did benefit from them.
Yeah. And there's different like programs here. One that came to mind was like College Bound and what was the other one? Like College Access or Avid. And Avid starts even from like my sister, she's in seventh grade. And so even like from now, like they're getting, you know, like those college tours and they have to make presentations about the universities and just like different thinking about like different careers that they may have in mind. And that was something that like when I went and I went to the same middle school she's in now. And that when I went, like that wasn't a thing, you know.
And also we're seeing now programs too for people that don't speak English. So they kind of have a better understanding of what they're getting into, what, you know, because it's not just their kids going to college. It's it's essentially them. Everything they're working towards from then and there from that moment is dedicated to getting their children through that process. So, yeah, we're seeing more programs that are available to parents like that. And that those should be encouraged everywhere. We should be seeing people getting help doing the payment plans because we know that for first generation folks, it's very difficult to figure out how to navigate this financially. Like, I know that was a huge barrier for me. And I know for a lot of the folks that, you know, that we have in our community, like in Blue Group, et cetera, like we always talked about where can we find scholarships? Where can we find the money? How do we do this or that? Because that is... without receiving, you know, that federal aid, we lack a huge benefit there too.
Yeah.
And some of us didn't even qualify for state financial aid, which is something we'll talk more about later. So I kind of want to ask you a weird question, but like how, like what were you thinking when you graduated high school? Or like, I guess before that, right?
Before, because they started talking to you like, what was it like? Summer before, you know, and stuff like that, before senior year, and they're just like, oh, you know, have you thought about what kind of career or what do you want to do and things like that. Yeah, so I always had in mind that I wanted to be an elementary teacher, and from like I want to say middle school, that's what I like started working for and making like volunteering and, you know, like looking at like just like schools or what, like kind of like making my own little plan to whatever extent I knew how to do. And by then, like you said, there wasn't any like state financial aid for us and DACA wasn't a thing. And so it was just all going to have to be like out of pocket. And I came and toured Western and I just loved it. And I was like, oh my gosh, I got to go here. You know, like I wanted to come like straight after high school, but also seeing that like it was going to come out of pocket. And my parents back then were like, we don't want you to work. We don't want you to like get distracted. You know, like your job is to stay in school and do that and graduate. And so I didn't want to put that whole burden on them. And so I chose to go to community college. And then let's see. Yeah. So just went to a community college and then from there transferred, but like all through like senior year, it was pretty much like also trying to figure out how, if I was going to do scholarships, like how to get scholarships. But at the same time, like I think I didn't know like who to ask, and I was like the first one out of the family.
And it was more unclear then who you could ask and who you could trust in a space that you had never been before.
Yeah. And so, I mean, and most of like the friends and stuff that and like people I hanged out with were also undocumented. So, I mean, like if we asked each other and we were all first gens, like, you know, there was only so far we could go because we all didn't know like exactly how to move forward. But yeah, so I just went to community college and then transferred, and now here we are.
Here we are.
I did not graduate with a teaching
degree, though. That completely changed.
But yeah, yeah. I did get an associate's in elementary education because that was still the plan. But then when I went to Western, I learned so much more about the system and everything. And I was like, yeah, I can't do this. I don't want to work in this system. And so now I was a human services major.
Still providing services to people. I would say for me, I was just kind of like, well, everyone's going to college, so I guess that means I have to go to college. But also, like, it was, like, you know, my parents' typical story in regards to them being like, you have to go, you have to go.
Yeah, very embedded.
And again, like, you're not going to work, focus on your school, this, this, and that. But little did they know, all the work that I did outside of the classroom was way more valuable to my professional development. Exactly, like, all of it.
Yeah.
Like, I probably benefited way more from the shit I did, the people I met, the places I went outside of the fucking classroom. Mm-hmm. So there's that. But I know that in 12th grade, I was pretty scared. I was really intimidated to just pick up my shit and move. But I was also one of those people that just, like, felt like I understood everything and was walking through the world with this attitude of, like, I'm fine. I'm awesome. I'll figure it out.
Yeah.
And then I get to Western and just cannot find my community and instantly start just fucking crying. Yeah. And I'm just like, and I went to like one Mecha meeting and was super intimidated, even though I acted like I wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
But it just didn't, I don't know.
Yeah.
Did not felt super lost and trying to understand why I was different. And turns out it was because I'm not white. And it was just a weird experience. I don't know. Fuck. But I'm glad that I made that journey, even though I'm still at Western, not as a student, but as like staff.
Yeah.
And never did I think I would work in higher education. But here I am working firsthand with a lot of amazing students that are really like doing the fucking work for the university. Mm-hmm. So yeah. It's really cool being on that end of it and also recognizing that, like, right now that might be where my community needs me most.
Mm-hmm.
And not just my undocumented community, but various other communities.
Mm-hmm.
But it's difficult because I never saw myself doing that.
Yeah.
And now I'm in this spot where I have to decide if I want to keep doing that and or transition to something different. And then deciding if I want to go back and, like, pursue a different degree, et cetera. But yeah, no, it's weird. The spot that I was when I was in 12th grade and now I'm still like the same person. Like I'm still like this goofy, like very like get out of the fucking way. Like still the same person. Just like my motives have changed a little bit and what I've invested in. Still, I don't know. I still feel like the same person though. So as we're talking a little bit about our experience from, you know, high school, graduating high school into going into higher ed, there's over 100,000 undocumented folks that graduate from high school every single year at minimum. And a lot of these folks are no longer eligible to apply for DACA, might still have access to higher education, but it's coming at a higher cost and or are completely barred from pursuing this and or didn't have the resources or support or whatever that scope was into pursuing higher education. But you know, and there's like various things that we were looking up when we were doing this because we know all the like lingo for Washington State, but we don't know it for other states. And we were like looking at like trying to understand of where everybody is. And again, we come from a super progressive state, so when we see that there is three different states that completely bar undocumented folks from even attending the institutions. We're just like, wow, like, that's a reality we didn't have to live.
Mm-hmm. That is very interesting. And as we were doing this, we were like, oh, didn't this state like change, or this state, you know, add this and that, and just kind of like crash into really like, I guess, back into the sad reality that they hadn't changed, and that a lot of the legislation and like legal wording and stuff was still barring a lot of undocumented students from pursuing their higher education.
And there's a, we were looking at what states had in-state tuition, mm-hmm. and that is 18 states that have in some kind of legislation that undocumented folks can get in-state tuition, but that's not even half. So over half of the country does not give undocumented people the access to even be in higher ed. Mm-hmm. And when we're going to talk a little bit more about like the workforce later, but when we're seeing that undocumented folks aren't in management positions or mm-hmm. higher professional like positions or whatever you want to call them, mm-hmm. like that is directly that's correlated to that. That is completely correlated to that. And you know, one of the states that recently just got in-state tuition, which is huge, is Missouri. Mm-hmm. And I like the way that you said that went about happening. Do you want to share that?
Yeah. So with Missouri, what had happened was they were passing their state budget. And I think I told you it was like 67 million or billion, something like that.
29 billion.
Oh. My bad. We were just adding numbers up in here. Like, you did this earlier where I was like, there's so many students in, where was it? Oh, in Missouri, right? And she wrote like a whole completely different
number. Yeah, I was like, wait a second. That doesn't make
sense. I think it's like, there's like 3,000, almost like 4,000 like DACA recipients in Missouri. And she wrote like 300 something. I was like, why would they all be in Missouri? But yeah, so it was this budget that they were trying to pass. So there's about like 4,000 like DACA recipients in Missouri. And what we were seeing with the state budget, in the language, there was something that like prohibited the state from allowing them to give in-state tuition to you know, well, to undocumented folks. And like they, in that committee, like somebody opposed the language, and so then they voted against it, and then they removed that language, which allowed now for like universities and colleges and stuff in Missouri to allow or give like undocumented folks in-state tuition. But this goes back to like a lot of what we talk about in terms of language and how language really like affects you know, a lot of the way that like students and undocumented folks live and get to like move around in terms of jobs, you know, and schools and everything. So I don't remember or recall really who, like what part of the committee, voted against it, but, that passed. And so now like Missouri will have in-state tuition for undocumented folks.
Which is amazing. Congratulations, Missouri.
Mm-hmm. And I like don't give that credit to these
the
like,
government,
you know,
yeah, fuck
and
them.
The committee who voted against it. No, I'm sure there was hella work by the people there who did this and who pressured them and who moved all these things around to make sure there was a change.
100%. And I totally know people that are directly working in that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I always hate it how in articles and stuff like that, it's always like, oh, you know, like committee or in state or the
they pass this,
you know,
like, yeah.
And like, no, it's not them, don't give them the credit,
it's
credit.
All the communities, exactly. Mm-hmm. And you know, the person that I'm thinking of that was involved in some education work down in Missouri, mm-hmm. is the person we had on our podcast last, which is Alex Martinez. Mm-hmm. But also, you know, let's talk about like one of the reasons we mentioned all the different programs that we're seeing in K-12 now is also because we're looking also at the ones that we have in higher education, and we're saying that they're not enough. Mm-hmm. Like in-state tuition is not enough because it is not enough to give to all the people that are mm-hmm. undocumented pursuing this. It is not enough money in general. Mm-hmm. it is like you can't just throw money at a something and hope that it works out. Like, that's not the reality of it.
Yeah.
And like, there has to be different programs, right, that allow, that teach like their families and their parents on how mm-hmm. to like get this in-state tuition, mm-hmm. or if you don't qualify for this, what else can you do?
Yeah. And what are your options?
What are your options, not just in this university but in other universities, mm-hmm. if that makes sense?
Yeah. And we've had like our number of encounters of like private universities or institutions that will work with like students, right, and that will like help them and give them maybe a little extra in terms of scholarships and like help them pay for their tuition. And so also in that way, how can like universities work with these specific students to make higher education more accessible?
And also, like, let's literally push people to stop using language that prohibits people to have access to these things. Mm-hmm. Because when you are working on legislation on how to prohibit in-state tuition or prohibit undocumented folks to access higher education, mm-hmm. you are creating barriers for literally the gain of somebody else. Mm-hmm. So it is, again, your education or your this or that is coming at the cost of somebody else. Mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, why are we working so hard on prohibiting all these things instead of working with people to make things more accessible, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, as we're talking about, like, language and stuff, and one of the reasons we brought up education as a whole is what we were, you know, what happened in Missouri kind of was eye-opening to us, and we wanted to keep engaging in what is happening right now. And mm-hmm. we recently have seen that something that is always being brought up, and not just now but over decades, is mm-hmm. this push for e-verify, mandatory e-verify for every job in the United States. Mm-hmm. And e-verify is essentially like an information system that runs people's socials to see if they are citizens or not citizens.
Yeah, socials, IDs, like the documentation you submit for work.
And the again, like, the reason I bring up the language is because when you look at how politicians and people are justifying this mandatory e-verify, is because these jobs are reserved for Americans. Mm-hmm. So because you're an American, you deserve this job, mm-hmm. just because you happen to like be here right now. Mm-hmm. And also like things such as like, what does it say? Employ the lawful or whatever. Like,
yeah.
Who is lawful? What is lawful? Who decides what is lawful? If you are deciding, like, it, I don't know. To me, I think it's really important to unpack those things because it brings us back to this holistic understanding of what it means to be human. Mm-hmm. Because I think often we get lost in these numbers and rhetoric and conversations about who is right and who's wrong because we're too busy literally masking that people aren't human. Mm-hmm. And if e-verify were to happen, like, of course it would affect millions of people.
Yeah.
And what does e-verify do with this information? Like, what does the employer decide to do when they use the e-verify, mm-hmm. find out that these folks are not here lawfully or whatever the fuck? Like, what do they do with that now? What are the steps after that? Like, mm-hmm. do they have to report it? Are they now, like, is this information being fed to mm-hmm. local officials?
Yeah.
Local officials that potentially work with ICE agencies? Or what, right? Like, mm-hmm. that isn't part of the conversation.
Yeah. This is bringing me back to a meeting we had. And this was when we were trying to get one of our members paid. And I'm thinking of, I think the assistant general of the school was like, you have to pay a fine if they find out, like, you know, she's working unlawfully. And the fine was like, what was it? Like $200, $300?
Yeah, pay that fucking fine.
I love that man. a person there in that meeting was like, I'll pay the fine. Like, you know, like, let her work. And we, like, I'm pretty sure we were all cracking up inside. But, you know, on the outside, we were very serious because, yes, again, going back to lawfully, unlawfully, and how, you know, who decides what way and how, like, people will work.
And there's a lot of our, you know, families that probably do work completely under the table and mm-hmm. do not have to input their information here and there. Mm-hmm. But and a lot of those jobs are super labor intensive. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we've talked a lot about this in various things about how, you know, who is, you know, how do I even say this? I'm so used to saying it in this like one sentence that's so rehearsed and I'm trying to find how to say it differently, but essentially like, how is your community?
Like who occupies those jobs or?
No, hold on. Let me gather my thoughts. So what I'm trying to say is immigrants were brought in again through various points and times of history to essentially benefit the American economy. Mm-hmm. And so who is your community benefiting in the economy that benefits other people's economic and social, well-being. You know, well-being and status?
Yeah.
So when we think of immigrants being brought in, fuck that. Let's go back. When you literally kidnap and take a bunch of people to another country and make them slaves, you are literally forcing people and killing people to benefit your fucking economy, to benefit how you are going to progress in society. Mm-hmm. Like, I just went to the African American Museum in DC and I cannot stop thinking about it and how all of that historical context is impactful in everything that we do in our lives.
Yeah. And when they say, you know, that this country literally runs on brown and black, you know, bodies, it like that is literally what it has been since, like, I don't know, the colonizers came. My favorite quote from any movie, Black Panther, is not today colonizer, but that's out of this context. But anyway, yeah, so it's very black and brown.
And it comes with this rhetoric that, like, even though you're benefiting from all of this, that they are stealing your jobs. Mm-hmm. All the jobs that you are lining up for.
we are stealing. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, and sometimes we even joke around, like, I'm about to go over there and steal their job. Like, watch out.
We wanted to tie that specifically into this little part of, like, the workforce because I know I always, like, get so annoyed when anybody's like, oh, they're stealing my jobs, or when I see it in articles, when I see it in the news, because in reality, what, quote-unquote, jobs are we stealing, you know? And so we looked them up, and we found, let me see if I can pop it up.
That a lot of undocumented folks were in a lot of jobs such as construction, fast food, dairy industry, agricultural jobs, service jobs, all jobs that benefit other people.
And so this study, what it measured was basically unauthorized immigrants, you know, versus U.S. born immigrants and the types of jobs that they held. And so, like, I'm just going to go into, like, the service. So the service jobs being like janitors, child worker, cooks, etc. Like 33% of undocumented folks held those jobs versus 17%. And then when in terms of like professional management and like business and finance types of jobs, 36% of U.S. born held those types of jobs versus like 13% of undocumented folks. And so that really like shows, you know, again, the type of like labor and like position that these certain like policies and the language and everything like ties it back together to keep us, you know, in these types of jobs for the advancement of
Other most people. Likely
our white counterparts.
Yeah. You know? And again, this is again correlated to what we were saying earlier when all these barriers for not even higher education, but then being able to pay for higher education or being able to stay in higher education or what comes after or whatever, you know, like that completely correlates with it.
Yeah.
And it doesn't seem like it's not done on purpose. It's completely on purpose, which is why people of color, black men, black women weren't able to go into, you know, higher education until a certain time, why women couldn't vote during a certain, until, you know, a certain amount of time. So like all of this was completely structured to be this mm-hmm. way.
Yeah.
And it still is. And so for us to even have the opportunity to work is a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you do when you, like, let's say that, you know, we have this conversation all the time. What happens if DACA's gone tomorrow and none of us can even say, like, we don't even know what to say.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, we have gotten so used to being in these jobs.
Yeah.
That aren't, that may be labor intensive, but also aren't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And when I think about it, and every, like, every time that I get, like, a paid sick day or vacation or like paid vacation and everything, like I think about like all the, you know, not just my hard work, but the hard work that like my parents had to do so that I could have that privilege, right?
Exactly.
To have that privilege of like, okay, if I'm sick, well, I'm gonna take the day off and I'm gonna get paid.
Mm-hmm.
Because they didn't have that, again, because of those barriers, because of the language, and because of the structure of the system.
Yeah. And, you know, it was my dad's birthday a few days ago and I was sitting in my office and I called him and he was telling me how he was at work and how it was like a really hard day at work and all these things. And I instantly felt like shit
mm-hmm.
because I'm sitting there like, I have this office job.
Mm-hmm.
I am essentially my own manager
mm-hmm.
and I can do like, I just felt so guilty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I was making twice as much as my father, literally doing a third of the fucking work.
Mm-hmm.
And not to say that emotional or like office jobs aren't exhausting, because they are in their own way, but it's yeah. a different kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
It is very different than being physically exhausted.
Mm-hmm.
And not just physically exhausted, right? Because emotionally exhausted, that you are literally convinced that this is what mm-hmm. you need to be doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's not to say that like all of these jobs that we're naming, like the construction jobs or the fast food jobs, that the people in those jobs don't have job satisfaction, because mm-hmm. that's not true.
No,
that's not true. My mom's been working at McDonald's for 15 years yeah. and she loves her yeah. job.
Yeah. So also moving away from that narrative, because I think sometimes a lot of folks were, or like even, you know, some parents are like, oh no, like that's not the type of work you want to do. Or, you know, like mm-hmm. we want you in like an office, or, you know, to have like all these different privileges. But sometimes like that, like education or like the types, different types of education isn't for everybody. And we all kind of like find our own way and what that looks like and what like that job satisfaction looks like.
Exactly. And it doesn't always have to be job satisfaction. It could just be like your own personal satisfaction of mm-hmm. being alive. Like,
yeah.
Like, I really had a really hard time understanding when people would say, like, manifest your own reality, because that's not the choice our parents had.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's not the choice our parents had. And when we're sitting here being like, I could literally do whatever the fuck I want.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's a completely different generation, a completely different narrative and story. And that's why our parents don't understand when we say we have either, like, mental health issues
mm-hmm.
or we're going through heartbreak
mm-hmm.
or whatever, you know, like yeah. they have a harder time understanding, because they're like, wait a second, like
their priorities were different at the time.
Exactly.
When they're only like, you know, thing was mostly to survive and provide and mm-hmm. you know, maintain family safety.
Yeah. And for our generation, we're so consumed by social media
mm-hmm.
by portraying and being this person that we want to express to the world or whatever mm-hmm. and I don't know, there's so many layers to it, but I think it's I don't know, we should have a whole episode on just like social media
yeah,
because I think that plays a huge role on how our communities are impacted and or how mm-hmm. that information is relayed to them
mm-hmm. yeah,
and we see that like having a huge following now is so much power. And we talked about that too and the down with the if you have not listened to Down with Elitism, go back and listen to it. It has by far been our mm-hmm. best episode. Yeah. I actually had a friend who messaged me today and was like, I just listened to it again because it's so fucking good.
Mm-hmm.
It's check it out. Check it out.
Go.
And, you know, I think that. Fuck, like, I don't know. It's really hard trying to define what success is, because mm-hmm. success is so different for everybody. And even mm-hmm. when our parents try to measure like our own success mm-hmm. based off of theirs. Like, I think it's kind of cute, but also, like, just know what you want for yourself mm-hmm. Now that you were given the opportunity to make that decision. Mm-hmm. Because that wasn't the reality for a lot of our ancestors and people before us.
Yeah. Yeah, so that, like, that reality and the way we see, you know, ourselves, like, moving forward will look different for everybody. But still, I think in terms of everybody who provides and, like, does whatever they need, you know, to do, I mean, everyone deserves, a huge shout out for the work that they do.
Regardless of what it is. Mm-hmm. So really, this episode was just kind of to cover a little bit about, like, just kind of our evaluation of what happened through K through 12 and mm-hmm. what is kind of happening now and then within higher education itself as well. Mm-hmm. And also evaluating just, like, what the alternative was. Mm-hmm. Not saying that the alternative is better or worse. It's just a different option. Mm-hmm. And sometimes not an option, right? Sometimes there is no fucking option. That's just the path that you were going to take, whether by choice or whether if that was just the circumstance. Mm-hmm. We just know that we're going to do what we have to do to survive and provide. But we also wanted it to be kind of fun talking about how we had, you know, kind of some of the questions that we had before higher education, during and after. Mm-hmm. So we have a couple questions that we're going to ask each other, and we don't know which one is which.
It's kind of like through random.
Yeah.
All right, let's see.
Are you going to go first?
Yeah, I'm looking at my questions. I'm trying to figure out which one to start with. I think I'll leave that one for later. Okay, I think as we talk about, like, our parents and what they, you know, did to help us get here. Also, like, who mentored you, and, like, who were the people who, like, pushed you forward?
I would say I was really mentored by Betsy Hasegawa from Whatcom Community College, and also Emmanuel Camarillo, who honestly questioned my motives a lot. And that was really helpful. I could always tell when he disagreed with what I was saying or doing. And I was like, it helped me reevaluate, you know, like mm-hmm. I said, I need kind of that guidance and consulting. Mm-hmm. Another good mentor, I would say, is Maru Mora for sure. And currently, I feel like my three biggest mentors are Tony from the Hispanic Heritage Foundation, Juan and Rita from Trinity University, who have honestly changed my life. So mm-hmm. good mentors. Look for mentors. You need mentors. Mm-hmm. And people are always afraid to ask for mentorship. There's people out there that really mm-hmm. want to provide that guidance for others. So get it.
Okay.
All right. No, what's I'm going to ask you. All right. Me? Are you ready?
Yeah.
A financial difficulty that you had.
So I think it was, like, my first year. And so it was me moving away and me having to, like, pay the, or put kind of, I would say, like, I felt it as a burden on my parents, like, extra rent, you know, and, like, food and for transportation and everything else that I, like,
needed.
Because, like I said, my parents were very, like, strict on, like, don't, like, get a job or don't do this, you know, like, we just want you to focus on your education. And I always felt kind of bad. So I like I didn't want to, just put that whole burden on them. So I would try to, like, get scholarships and stuff. And Western has, like, the, was it, like, short term,
payment plan loan?
No, a short term, like, scholarship thing.
Oh, it's a short term loan.
Yeah. And so, like, I think, in terms of, like, when I needed or when I, like, was able to apply for that, I would, because then I was like, okay, well, that's, like, a month of rent, or that's, like, you know, for groceries or for, like, different things that I needed. And so I would sometimes not ask for the money that, like, I needed, like, from my parents, And just would just kind of like wait or like to pull like through the week. And I would go home on the weekends. And then during the weekends, I would work back at home and then I would get some money and then like, you know, make that last throughout the whole week and then like do that all over again. Next question, Vicky, for you. Let's see. Oh, this one's interesting. Eating habits.
We laughed that. Okay,
so many things. Okay, so I think kind of what were your eating habits as you transitioned here to, you know, to Bellingham?
So I'm not gonna lie, before I came to Bellingham, I couldn't cook. So I was 18, didn't know how to fucking chop an onion or cook rice, like could not do anything. Mm-hmm. And it was because my mom really fucking spoiled me. Like she just kind of like never let me in the kitchen, would always be like, no, you're gonna make a mess, you're gonna get hurt. Mm-hmm. Like just like kind of ridiculous. And I didn't know how to take care of myself. So yeah. I through trial and error and through meeting people and through watching a lot of Food Network, I was able to learn how to cook. Mm-hmm. And I love cooking now, but even now that I cook, I don't have the best eating habits. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to lie, throughout college, I definitely didn't either. And mm-hmm. and I see that in a lot of college students. Mm-hmm. When I was in school and even now as someone that works around college students, yeah. like, y'all don't eat. Like, we don't eat. We'll go all day.
We won't eat healthy.
Or we won't eat healthy either. Like, we'll go all day without eating. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that was a common thing I saw in myself and other people was mm-hmm. that we wouldn't eat all day and then be like, oh, shit, like, I need to eat.
Yeah.
So I would say that was one of the things that I was really struggling with in college was eating, mm-hmm. making time. Like I loved cooking, but like it was finding the time to do it mm-hmm. on top of like yeah. working and going to school and doing all this other side stuff that we did. Mm-hmm. So I definitely wish I could have taken care of myself better in that realm. And I still think that. I think that I'm still learning how to have a relationship with food and how to understand food in general. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that one's tricky. That one's hard. That one's really hard, yeah. especially because I feel like I had an eating disorder a lot through my K-12 experience, mm-hmm. but you know, people didn't see it that way because mm-hmm. that wasn't a reality, you know, like mm-hmm. it kind of goes back to our parents not believing yeah. in that kind yeah. of, you know, and like our parents putting a lot of pressure in us to look a certain way. Mm-hmm. So yeah, That is my answer for that one.
Okay,
let's do one more question. I want to know, something you would go back in time to tell yourself.
Who was this in general?
Like, for higher education. For higher, like, yeah, in higher ed.
I was just thinking about the boyfriend I wouldn't date. No, I'm just kidding.
Don't we all have that, though? Don't we all?
I think it would be telling myself to get out there and like looking for my community. My first year, I was really like closed off, and like Western is such a like a white campus that I was just like, oh my gosh, like why did I choose this? You know, like where am I gonna find my like my community? And because Lakewood/Tacoma is so diverse, like, I just felt, like, the culture shock. And I think maybe that's also part of why I always went back, like, every weekend. But it would be, you know, to really get out of my comfort zone and to go, like, to the ESC and just, like, spend more time with like, you know, more students of color. I think I started doing that my second year. And I have another best friend who just like always calls me out on that. She's like, when you went through your like white friend phase and like things like that. And it's super funny, but I love her, but it's true. So just I would have told myself to get out more and connect with the people that like resembled, you know, resembled me and that I felt like that connection towards.
100%. Thanks for sharing that. Yeah. We had a bunch of other questions, but that's probably enough.
Yeah.
there were long-winded answers. We wanted to end kind of just reading some graduation caps, only because it is graduation season, and mm-hmm. we know that it's not, you know, it's a celebration for a lot of people. It's not just for themselves, but the struggles that their families have mm-hmm. gone through. Also, congratulations to your families, too. Your families mm-hmm. that have worked so hard and have dreamed of this for so long.
Yeah.
And it's just so beautiful to see. So congratulations to you all. And, you know, keep on fucking doing the most.
Yeah.
Keep on, like, you know, taking your community with you to the fucking top.
Mm-hmm.
So graduation caps. Olga's more about this than I am. My graduation cap said, fuck this. which is very, very, like, true to who I am.
Yeah, definitely.
What did yours say, Olga?
Mine was, like, en sus maletas llevaban este sueño. And that was, like, more so for my parents because, like, most of, you know, immigrant parents, like, their dream has always been for their children to, you know, get a higher education and make sure that education, you know, like, paid off and like, bettered themselves in the future. So that's what mine said. And just, like, looking through, like, all the other graduation caps and things like that, I think we've all made it, or more so I've seen, like, Latinx folks, you know, have made it where it's dedicated to the struggle.
Do you want to read some? Because I definitely don't have any.
Yeah. So I just went on Instagram and looked up, like, grad caps or whatever, or in DocuGrad. But this one is one of the first ones, and it is, like, sunflowers and roses painted on it, and it reads, "Para mi mami, quien cruzó fronteras para darme el mundo." So for my mom, who crossed borders to give me the world. And I believe that's probably her and her mom that is also pictured on the grad cap.
Oh, that makes my heart melt.
This one also is really, again, tying back to, like, the parents and family who just, like, you know, give everything to make sure that we have this pathway. So this one reads, "Para mis padres llegaron sin nada y me dieron todo." So for my parents, they came with nothing and gave me everything.
I just found one that I think I would have put. Mm-hmm. And it says, "I am one of those people Mexico sent."
Oh, yeah, yeah. Exactly. With that, I found one that said "job stealing immigrant," and I loved it because now we're gonna steal different types of jobs.
Exactly. So watch out. Yes. Your office job will be mine soon.
Yes.
Is there any other ones you want to share?
Let me see. The one that we've also constantly seen was "they migrated, so I graduated." And I really love this one. It says, "time to get that bread." And it just has different pictures of pan dulce. I love it.
Oh, that is funny.
Yeah, so I don't know. Shout out to everybody who's been, like, so creative with their grad caps and stuff. My sister will be graduating soon.
Same with my sister.
Yeah, so we're excited for that. And hopefully she asked me to help her because I love artsy things.
Yeah. My sister's graduating with a double major in global studies and something else. I don't know what.
Why are we like this? We never know what's going on with our siblings, but that's fine. Yeah, mine's graduating with a business degree. It's a long-ass title. I don't remember what it is. She's told me multiple times. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. Because she listens.
Yes, I do. I just, it's always like, it's such a long title.
Oh, imagine if one day we can get both of our sisters on here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
We'd try.
We'd probably get our dads on it before our sisters.
Honestly.
Oh, for real. Well, again, shout out to all the graduates coming. Shout mm-hmm. out to your families. And mm-hmm. just shout out to everyone who's out there fighting and
yeah.
for their communities, providing for their communities, mm-hmm. finding out, you know, what they love to do. Like, mm-hmm. shout out to all of you. Fuck yeah.
For all the familias and everything. Just everybody in general who's like, you know, keeps pushing through even though this government keeps trying to push us down.
They're not ready. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
This has been a
pow, 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 pow.
Production.